Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Okay, so still, now we're bringing in the, we're dealing with the differences between the Supreme Lord and the living entities and the material nature based on consciousness, that the Lord is supremely conscious, the Jiva is conscious, but only of his field of activities. And the material energy is unconscious. And at the same time as then we're coming into the element that being freed from material consciousness, then that's going to situate us in pure Krishna consciousness. The Supreme Conscious Ishwara is different to the living entities in this way. Both the consciousness of the Lord and that of the living entity are transcendental. It is not the consciousness that is generated by the association of matter. Okay, so in other words, the point is supreme conscious and the living entity is different. Right, that's the thesis that's being said there. Now, in giving the explanation, then we're starting with this that they're both conscious. Right, this is the point that we're establishing. So the similar is they're both conscious, but the difference is then what is the quality of this consciousness? It is not that consciousness is generated by the association of matter. Right? So now we're establishing also, we're cutting that the most materialists consider that the jiva or life, consciousness is coming from dead matter. Practically you could say basically almost all of them. In the Vedic there'll be concepts not like that, but that they'll just eternally be there and they don't even discuss where he's come from. It's not important to them. But most all, for the impersonalists, I mean, so your Mayavadis, your Buddhists, your other material, the karmis and all that, for all of them, consciousness has come from material energy. Right? Even though the impersonalists and the Mayavadis, they are transcendentalists. So they're going to make the point that the soul is transcendental. But their point that you actually have an individual soul, that concept has come from the material energy. It's the illusion covering Brahman. And therefore you, in an illusory way, think that you're an individual conscious entity. So therefore, this individual consciousness is coming from material energy. So they don't actually have that much of a difference. That's why the karmi philosophy and the impersonal philosophy actually don't have, they can work together very nice. Therefore, you can have someone who, you know, you do good work, you'll go to the heavenly planets, and, you know, it's all controlled by God, but God's impersonal. Does that make sense? So, these things, material consciousness is material consciousness. It's just different flavors of the same thing. So the difficulty comes is that Yes. So it's important to note that material consciousness is the same thing. It's just basically two sides of the of two different flavors of the same thing. So, yeah, so that must be pointed out here, because not the consciousness is generated by the association of matter. Right? So matter is covering or associating, therefore it's creating. Like that. Or the material energy itself somehow or another is generating by its interaction. None of these concepts are there. So now you've separated off the difference between the Supreme Lord and the living entities, that is consciousness, and the material energy that is separate. Then now you're going to make the difference between the living entity and the Supreme Lord. Right? Does that make sense? Okay. That is a mistaken idea. The theory that consciousness develops under certain circumstances of material combination is not accepted in the Gita. Consciousness may be pervertedly reflected by the covering of material circumstances, just as light reflected through colored glass may appear to be a certain color, but the consciousness of the Lord is not materially affected. Okay, so now the living entity's consciousness may be polluted, just as, remember, we're discussing reflectionism. Is as the process of the senses pulling information, the mind digesting that, then the intelligence getting illumination from the actual consciousness of light of the soul. When that then, that process, when the intelligence becomes illuminated and therefore the whole process works, then that illumination also reflects back on the soul. Right? Does that make sense? You know, just like you have, let's say, some light and it shines on a mirror, it reflects back. Like that. So now, the living entity who identifies with that reflection, then he becomes materially entangled. But that living entity who doesn't identify, but works with the reflection. Just like you don't identify with the reflection, but you can work with it. Right? If you identify with it, you have a problem. People will say you're crazy. You know, like that. Like that, yeah. Lord Krishna said, Mayadhyak Shena Prakriti, when he descends into the material universe, his consciousness is not materially affected. If he were so affected, he would be unfit to speak on transcendental matters as he does in Bhagavad Gita. One cannot say anything about the transcendental world without being freed from materially contaminated consciousness. So the Lord is not materially contaminated, right? So he's speaking on the transcendental subject matter. He's establishing, you know, the top transcendental subject matter. And so that's because he's qualified. He's not contaminated by it. So this is establishing that he is beyond, but the living entity can be affected. Their consciousness can be identified with the material energy. Like that. Our consciousness at present, however, is materially contaminated. So the whole thing, as the Bhagavad Gita teaches, is that we have to purify this materially contaminated consciousness. Because that's the other side. Always remember Krishna. Never forget. So when we say you have to purify the consciousness, that's so we can remember Krishna. We always have to be very careful that as we progress in devotional service, we're aware and we contemplate why we are performing our activities. Because otherwise, we may make the mistake that I'm trying to purify my consciousness. That's the whole point of devotional service. No, the point of devotional service is to always remember Krishna. But when the consciousness is impure, then we forget Krishna. Right? When we forget Krishna, then we have a problem. Right? So, to always remember and never forget, we have to purify the consciousness. Does that make sense? You know, you want to cut sabji, but to do it, the knife's dull, so you have to sharpen the knife. So is your whole point sharpening knives? You know, so after, you know, you've been there for 3 hours sharpening your knife, someone else in the kitchen may ask them, and so what's next? No, you know, we have to keep the knife sharp, you know, things like that. You know, you're supposed to do something with it. So it's not an end in itself. Right? It's part of the process. Like that. You may have, I'm doing this activity because it will purify my consciousness. So it's a goal. You perform some aspect of Abhideya. You perform an activity. And that will give you a result. But that's not the final result. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's just like you go into the bathroom in the morning. And so you have a goal that, you know, you'll figure out, you know, where the sink is and, you know, figure out, you know, that kind of like blurry blob in front of you in the mirror. That's yourself. You'll be able to therefore identify so you can figure out where does the toothbrush go, right, like that. And so you may have goals like that. You brush your teeth, this and that, and then take your bath. But it has an ultimate goal. You're trying to get the Mangalarti. You know, right? You're trying to be pure so you can serve Krishna. Does that make sense? So always, that's why it said the final goal must always end in Krishna. And anything short of that is a problem. They seem to have a problem. That's a lot of coquilles. Those are coquilles. Cuckoos. Like that. So I guess that's why they call them cuckoo, right? Nice. Yeah. Prabhupada always, somehow the Prabhupada's the only one I've seen translate it. When he translates cuckoo, then he'll say those birds that sing in five notes. Because they'll do five notes. Here they're using only one or two, but they'll go up to all five notes. Like that. I can hear the ones in distance. They're using them. In pure consciousness, our actions will be dovetailed to the will of the Ishwara, and that will make us happy. It is not that we have to cease all activities. Rather, our activities are to be purified, and purified activities are called bhakti. So, that's all right. They'll stop. I mean, it's the first time I've ever seen them do that. Generally, they're quite shy over here. Okay, now, in this, you have... Okay, pure consciousness, everything will be dovetailed in the Lord's service. So that means activity does not stop. Right? That's very important because... The Mayavadis think activity has to stop. Your activity means mundane. You're getting a mundane result, and so therefore, then maybe you better go over there. Just don't let them see you. Just go on the side and make some noise. Generally, they fly off. These guys are. I think he knows he's coming. Something's wrong.
Let the sound of the echo through.
Yeah. No. Oh, the funniest is the same thing is that you have a bamboo, and the top sometimes are open. You have these stumps, and then you get this little dinky frog inside the thing, and then they'll croak. And they'll sound like this monster, like 2-foot frog. And they seem to really appreciate that. They really like that. No. They can crawl out. They have no problem. You'll find little frogs all over the place. I don't know why they have this thing. They have to go up. So, like that. But it's really interesting. You know, you're walking by, and then you hear this big, like this, you know? And then you look inside, and there's this little, you know, like half inch frog. You know, so there you go. Yeah.
So there you go.
Yeah, they like the acoustics. Yeah. Okay. So here also many fine points. Is we're dovetailing our consciousness with the Supreme. Because the Karmis and the Gyanis will both have problem with this. The Gyani thinks activity is mundane, so therefore if you want to be spiritual, you have to stop all activity. Right? The Karmi thinks that only particular activities can be connected. Right? But that'll be seen and established by his own particular mundane conditioning. What he defines as good. Right? But the point is that it's dovetailing of the activity to Krishna that makes it worthwhile, not because it's good. You know what I'm saying? It's a very, very important thing that especially when we're dealing community activities. Philosophically, generally we don't have as much problem, but dealing in social systems, then we will consider something is good and something's not good. And then based on that, we'll say that this is devotional or not. You know, the person's giving class, he has a bit of an attitude, so that's not good. Because we'll say, you know, false ego's bad, but why? You know, is it because it'll get in the way in some way of devotional service, or because we don't like attitude? You understand? It's a very subtle point, a very important point. We'll find much of our social difficulties come from this point, this very point that he's got, because we're not able to see dovetailing is what's useful. So 11th canto defines good means connected to Krishna. It's that simple. If it's not connected to Krishna, it is not good. It doesn't matter how many people in this universe say it's good, it's not. Because God defines good and bad. Good means favorable for a relationship with Him. Bad means it's not favorable for a relationship with Him. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? The gopis, they're off dancing with Krishna. Is that good or bad? Good. Okay. They have husbands. They're married. So now, is it good or bad?
Good.
Okay. In this world, then you have people, and they're off with someone else's husband. Is that good or bad?
Bad.
Why is it bad?
Because it breaks the relationship with Krishna.
Yes, because the point is bad because the part, in other words, so therefore from this, do we determine is the parakiya rasa good or bad?
Depends.
Depends on what?
If it's connected to Krishna.
If it's connected to Krishna. That's the only difference. But we'll stand, no, it's bad here on its own. It stands on its own. But then we're falling prey to this deistic concepts that God and His creation are actually separate from each other. God is beyond, He's transcendental, He doesn't touch this world. But that means, but therefore, we don't see that He through His energies is run, we see that it's run separately, manifest separately. You understand? It's a subtle point, but very, very important point. Why do we say, oh, this devotee is not behaving properly? Why do we say that? From our own backgrounds, our own thoughts, our own feelings, or simply because it's not connected to Krishna. Does that make sense? If someone in the community was married and they had a parakiya rasa with Krishna, would it be a problem? No. So technically, it's not the part, it's that it's not connected to Krishna is the problem. You understand? That's the real thing. Then at this point you either get, oh, that's so simple. You know, things are more complicated than that. You don't understand. Or there's an anxiety. So then you're saying that, you know, morality is not important. Morality comes from dharma. But there, if one sees dharma, morality separate from dharma, it's not actually real morality. You know, so just like artha, separate from dharma, is not real artha. Why? Because it's temporary. You'll have it and it'll go away, it'll change. Because it's not based on inherent nature. And then, going back to dharma, then what's real dharma?
Sanatana
dharma, which means transcendental, devotional service. And what is between dharma, you know, here that we practice, and sanatana dharma? What's the stage in between?
Hmm?
No, we're talking Purusharthas. No, but I mean in the context of the Purusharthas.
Liberation.
Liberation, yeah. Because so that means you're performing the Dharma here, but it's based on the Shastra and eternal establishment of, you know, how Krishna's given it. Not just Dharma because it gives nice results. Or because I'm attached to it, or, you know, some other reason. That may be beginning inspiration, but then by following that Dharma on the platform of Naishkarmya, where you're doing it not wanting to have the results or for yourself, it's dovetailed. In other words, Dharma dovetailed in the Lord's service then frees you from material contamination so that moksha comes automatically. That's why I said a devotee who's performing devotional service, moksha comes automatically because then you're from the Dharma, you're performing Saddharma. Because it's that I'm doing it to not as a result, that's Naishkarmya, then gets rid of that, oh, forget Krishna, you know. And that you're doing it to please Krishna as devotional service, that's what gives you bhakti. So it's the same activity, but the activities I don't want the result from ourselves frees you from the material world. You get liberation. The act I do it to please Krishna, that gets you devotional service. Right? It's important. One may say it's the same thing, but in one sense, it's not exactly the same thing. You know what I'm saying? There is a subtle difference. That's why Krishna in the Gita is constantly bringing out the point of perform your duty, okay? Then that means you're human. Right? You're practicing the Varnashram principles with knowledge. So it shouldn't be just sentiment that you're doing. You're doing it with knowledge because with knowledge you'll get realization. If you just do it out of sentiment, then it won't give you realization. If you just sit around and contemplate it and don't practice it, you won't get realization. So performance of Dharma, you know, your duties with knowledge will get you realization. Right? And then, what's the next point he makes? With detachment. Because then that will free you from the material conditioning. Then what's next?
Thinking of him.
And then, because Kamsa also is thinking of Krishna. Yeah, and it's, and you know, in thinking of him as a person. You know, it means doing it for him. Right? So all these take us through the stages. One is that presentation itself already combines your first six chapters of Gita. It's the conclusion of all six. Perform your duties, right? It means that you're doing it on the spiritual platform. That's his point. So that's already established. The second chapter, that his duties are going to be on the battlefield of Kurukshetra in that environment. That's your first chapter. Now he's going to do his duties. That's third chapter. With knowledge, that's the fourth chapter. That being combined, right, then with detachment, that's your fifth chapter. Then thinking of him, that's your sixth chapter. Seventh chapter, doing it to please Krishna, that takes all your next six chapters. Because the conclusion of that is that then Krishna is the Supreme Person. You understand? So you've gone through all the things of karma yoga, jnana yoga, dhyana yoga, and then bringing it to bhakti yoga. Perform your duties, right? That's karma yoga. With knowledge, that's jnana yoga, right? And with detachment, that's specific. So you can sometimes you'll leave off the with detachment, because when you say with knowledge should have detachment. They go together. But just to make it clear, then I'll put that. Then thinking of me, dhyana yoga, and doing the activity for me, bhakti yoga. So that is buddhi yoga. So that's what the Gita is presenting. So it says here, the whole thing, as the Gita teaches, we have to purify this material consciousness. Right? And that's being done to establish us in Krishna consciousness. Is this clear? So these are subtle points. We'll just say, oh, this is introduction. But right now we've already discussed very fine points between our philosophy and all other philosophies. And even within Vaishnav, you know, coming to the highest platform. You know, what Rupa Goswami says is pure devotional service. You understand? So these simple words, they carry all this stuff. This is what this means. You understand? So if someone says, Prabhupada's only giving basic, means that person doesn't actually know how to see these things. Not that they don't know these things, but they're not connecting them. That's all. You know? So simply it's just a matter of, you know, so it gets down to semantics or something. So it's a matter of being able to see. You can see this, then it always... Does that make sense? Okay, so dovetailed means that the activity is connected. That's what makes it special. Not because it's good because you say so. No, it's good because Krishna says so. So that's the connection. Like that. Right? Does that make sense? Like that. Yes.
It's interesting what a dovetail joint is in carpentry.
A dovetail joint.
Like they use that example.
Yeah.
It's two things that specifically go together. The exact shape of the exact
shape. Yeah, yeah. They're connected. Yeah, yeah. It also means is that you have something bigger and then you focus it. You know, like that, like you also done on the dove, it comes like that, because that's how you get the joint, is from that connection. Because the tail is also, it comes together, but also when they open the tail, it goes out the other way, that makes the, how it holds, like that. You know, but the point is that it's, one thing is then connected to another that seemingly doesn't have any connection, but is able to be connected. So this dovetailing is a science, right? It's not a sentiment. It's not a simple way, I mean, just to be practical or these things. It's the most practical, but it's a science. It's part of the philosophy. So we're able to understand how to connect things to Krishna. It's very important. That's why these fine points are given. Okay. So when our actions will be dovetailed with the will of Ishvara, then that will make us happy. Now that's very important, not just, yeah, okay, you know, I mean, I can go for a walk, I could go take prasad, I could dovetail my activities, yeah, any of these will make me happy. No, dovetailing is the only way a living entity can be happy. That's the actual thing. The jiva cannot be happy in any other method, because he is not the Supreme Lord, and he's not the internal potency. Right? We've already been established that getting involved with the material energy doesn't really get anywhere. So our position is we always exist, the internal potency, in the relationship with Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? Because we're connected to the internal potency. This is the nature of the jiva. Okay. Okay. It is not that we have to cease all activities. Rather, our activities are to be purified, and purified activities are called bhakti. Right? Now, just because you're doing a pure activity, that doesn't make it bhakti. You're doing a pure activity to please Krishna. That makes it bhakti. Right? So we've established that we're doing this to please the Lord. It's dovetailed. So dovetailed means it's connected. So that kind of dovetailed activities that purify, or the activities themselves are purified, that's bhakti. Right? So all these things then build up. That's Rupa Goswami. Freed from karma and jnana, you're conscious. So we've already established consciousness. Right? It's favorable to the Supreme Lord. Right? So it's dovetailed. Right? And it's freed from karma and jnana. So we're not trying to do it for ourselves. Right? Because karma and jnana are an impurity. So you purify that. Then it's connected to the Lord, that's favorable to the Lord. So it's defining pure devotional service. Activities in bhakti appear to be like ordinary activities, but they are not contaminated. They are purified activities. An ignorant person may see that a devotee is acting or working like an ordinary man, but such a person with a poor fund of knowledge does not know that the activities of the devotee or of the Lord are not contaminated by impure consciousness or of matter. They are transcendental to the three modes of nature. We should know, however, that at this point our consciousness is contaminated. Right? They are transcendental to the three modes of nature. Okay, then transcendental consciousness. Yeah. We're contaminated. So that may make something. So it's very important that this element of baby in bathwater, right? We're bringing this up now. Because otherwise, what happens is that we will see something that's impure, right? But as I mentioned before, the devotees are not working like ordinary people. So to see them in that way is to possess hellish consciousness. Right? And so, of course, it, you know, applies to the non-devotee because he won't see the difference. But even then, sometimes they see, well, there's something different. They're saintly. But devotees think like this. That's still not going to protect you from hellish consciousness. Right? So when a devotee performs an activity, the activity itself is authorized. Therefore, it has transcendental potency. It is working. People are moving forward in God's consciousness. Does this make sense? At the same time, is because we ourselves, our consciousness is polluted, we may also be at the same time engaged, you know, by consciousness in such a way that that's not actually the standard. But devotional service is not ordinary. Right? Which is stronger, material activity or spiritual activity? Spiritual activity. But if somebody is doing something, let's say you have a temple president, he's managing, he's a good manager, he's doing it, you know, like that. He's, you know, you can see in that way he's, you know, committed and all that. But he's got a bit of an attitude. He doesn't deal necessarily. He's, you know, somehow or another very absorbed in being in charge. Right? So that part you can say is not good. But now of the two, which is more important? Yeah, the service itself. So now if there's a problem, what do you want to do? Yes, somehow or another, if there's a way that one can bring out this and help the person get through this attitude and at the same time maintain the service. But if we think, well, because they're like that, they shouldn't do the service, then we're thinking that actually Maya has more power over Brahman. So that's the way the Mayavadis think. That's the way the materialists think. That's the way the moralists, the religionists think. And you'll note that in any of the devotional literatures, all those categories are who the author of the book states should not be reading this book. So Nectar of Devotion in the beginning kicks out all those persons. Why? Because they're unqualified. Because they don't actually understand what devotional service is. Right? But it doesn't change. That's the thing he said here, is that it may appear like ordinary activities. So it appears the same, but it's different. Because the mood is different. That's the point. If you have the mirror and this reflection, right? So is the reflection different from what the person is reflected in the mirror? The object reflected in the mirror, is it different from the object that it's reflecting? No. Now is that object that's reflected, is the reflection itself real? No, it's not. It's not there.
It's real.
It's there. So what's not real about it? Identification with it. You understand? Reflection's real. It's there. But if you say, this is me, no, it's a reflection of you. It's not you. Right? So the living entity has its natural spiritual form and all that. So activities, you know, relatives, emotions, actions, desires, all those things are there. That's real. But if he thinks what's reflected in the material energy, on the water of desire, then that's an illusion, because that isn't him. It looks similar, but it's not. Does that make sense? So these activities, it's the activity that's important. We have to be able to see with that kind of vision. Right? That's what's being given. Otherwise, Arjuna is very religious and dutiful. And he is seeing things according to the external form. So we start in the first chapter with that. Someone who accepts the Vedic culture, practices it, is exemplary in it. You know, can't discuss and explain the scriptures. And is following the form of his duties. But the form of his duties is all he sees in it. He'll see some subtleties to it. like that, but he's not seeing beyond. He's not seeing to transcendental consciousness, which is the purpose of the Vedic culture. Right? Brahminical culture means to be established in Brahman. Right? So that's at least the minimum point the Vedic culture should establish, but it's actually meant to establish Supreme Brahman. And that's Bhagavan. Right? So then in doing this, then if we're not careful, then what we do is fall into the same trap that all other philosophers and religionists have fallen into. And that's a mundane perception of the absolute truth. And that's going to cause trouble. Right? That's going to cause trouble. Right? Because it's not a matter of variety on the transcendental platform. It's a matter of variety within material consciousness. And that always creates differences and problems. Always, yes.
Maharaj, yesterday I read a comment where a devotee was saying that he supports Maharaj Yudhishthira's not telling a lie when Krishna asked him to, on the grounds that if he had of, it would have set an example that other people would follow. Is there any validity to that idea?
Is there any validity to that idea that, okay, if that supporting Yudhishthira is not telling a lie because it'll set a bad example? On one level, yes, if your plan is to stay in this material world and go to the heavenly planets, yes. But if your plan is to go back to Godhead, then what is truth? What is morality? What is truth and what's a lie? If it's not connected to Krishna, it's a lie. This is the fine point. And this is where that makes the difference between going back to Godhead and staying here. Because where are your attachments? Because there, why would you say it? His attachments to morality and setting the example in morality. What about setting the example in pleasing Krishna? Which is what Krishna asked. Alright? Does that make sense? Now, that will reflect, one could look at that and one could see, okay, it's a fine point and it's true. Scholars all go it both ways. Like that. But the point is, are we talking about morality being simply how you, you know, spend your time in this world for your own and get benefit, you know, yourself benefit, others benefit? Or is morality used for the purpose of coming to pure unalloyed devotional service? That's the thing. So both these points are there. And for those who can't see it, you generally better than they are more, because if they break that, then they generally become immoral, because the only reason is there is mundane good and bad, because if it pleases Krishna or not, that's not actually the drive. But you'll see that that kind of mentality will reflect in his relationships. Because what happens is the institutional element of the, you know, morality or being good or doing right is more important to him than the people he's interacting with. Right? So he's going to do very nicely like that, but you'll probably find that nobody's actually very close with him. He doesn't have any really close friends. And I'm including his wife in that definition. In reality. Because it's the science. You know what I'm saying? The relationship is the prominent element. Morality maintains it. You know what I'm saying? You have to have a standard by which you have a relationship. So that's your field of activities. But if you don't act in that, so therefore, he will stand on the field of activities and never actually interact. You know what I'm saying? Because say, I'm moral, but so what are you doing that proves that morality? Because morality is based on dharma. So what's the dharma of relationship that they can't explain? So that's why I say it's upadharma, it's not dharma. And Bhagavatam in the second verse already kicks that out. Yes?
I remember Srila Bhaktisiddhanta said that the pure devotee is always and necessarily right, even when he appears to be wrong. And the empiric pedant, even though everything appears to be chapter and verse correct, is always wrong.
Yes.
Because of that principle.
Yes, yes. It's a hard one to understand. It's that if you're not Krishna conscious, you have no good qualities. And if you're Krishna conscious, then you have all good qualities. But because we deal with the external, sometimes we can't see this. Because he has no good qualities means, okay, maybe today he does, but what about tomorrow? because he's not functioning on the eternal platform. But the devotee, maybe today he doesn't have it, but tomorrow he will. You know, because of devotional service. Because Krishna is the source of all good qualities. There's no good qualities separate from what God has. Qualities come from Him. And so if we think that we're going to cultivate these separately from Him, or they stand on their own without Him, what's the meaning? Because quality means activity. So if you're not seeing the quality in relationship to Krishna, that means the activity done based on your appreciation of that quality will not be Krishna conscious. Very, very fine points. The very, very fine points here. Yes.
That going back to that original start of that answer, you said it's a lie. It's not for Krishna.
Yeah, it's a lie because it's illusion. You're not actually seeing and connect. Why would it be good?
Is the root of that Krishna's how to make one happy? Krishna says, become happy by come to me, and otherwise you think I'll be happy by being listened to. Is that the root of the lie?
The root of the lie, yeah, you could say that, but at the same time is more the root of the lie is that what is going on? Why did Krishna is what? He's everything. So if you don't see Krishna in it, you're not seeing reality. That's one. On the other level, why does Krishna manifest the cosmic creation?
Just fulfill the desires and to tell them how to come back to
it. No, but I'm talking cosmic. That's universal. Cosmic means the whole thing. It means material and spiritual. For his pleasure. So that means, and that means the interaction, relationship between him and his creation. So it means him and his devotees. So if it's not based on that, it's not truth. You know? Because we're taking it, lie means, you know, something that's, you know, morally bad. No, lie means not truth. So morality, if you go back, there's a science there that it comes. Morality to us, why it strikes home is because it's emotional. Or it's actually quasi-emotional. It's not even real emotional. That's even more fun. Because only the senses, how you say, religiousness and the emotions coming from there, and devotional service and the emotions that come from there. So actually senses and sense objects, emotions experienced based on relationship and duty, and emotions and taste based on relationship with Krishna. These are the only real tastes of rasa. That of Brahman and that of morality, justice, and economics, these are quasi. They're in between. So they kind of appear to be, but there is nothing there. That's generally why people who are established on those two platforms, you know, the kind of the jnani platform or the moralistic platform, they're very, very, very dry people. Because they don't actually know what rasa is. It's one or the other. It's in between.
What are the two that have rasa? Is that material or spiritual?
No, it means you have five levels of consciousness, right? So anamoy, pranamoy, manamoy, vijnanamoy, anandamoy, right? So anamoy, the first platform, that of senses. Jnanamoy, no, excuse me. No, jnanamoy, that of religion, and anandamoy, that of devotional service, that's where rasa is situated. It's not situated in pranamoy or vijnanamoy. It appears to be a taste, but it's not actually relationship. You know what I'm saying? Because one is just, I'm doing good, and the other is, I'm freed from material energy. It's not actually based on the person. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, because it's like this. The state of pranamoy in the Vedic, you have two deities. You have Ganesh and you have the sun god. This is, you know, when the Panchopasana, the worshipping the five deities. So Suryas means worship of the sun, means you appreciate life. So any life you're careful about. So it's a nice thing. It's a good thing. It's cultured, it's refined, it's developed. But it's not specific individuals. It's just life. You understand? Or if they're Ganapatyas, means it's a particular group within life. you know, like that, you know, whatever it is, you know, the blue whales or, you know, whatever it is, then you appreciate them, but that's because they're a group. So the person is there in some, you know, poor village in some place in the world and feeding the people or giving out blankets to the kids. But it's kids, poor kids, not that individual kid. They may strike up something with them, but they're not doing it for that kid. They didn't come down there for that kid. They came down there for the concept of kids. You understand? That's why they can sometimes be seemingly so emotional and other times just dry as a bone. Because it's not actual rasa. It's in between two rasas. So that's the thing. If morality, which is that place, pranamoy, if it's not based on dharma, where's the taste going to come from? It then has to come from sense gratification. And that, of course, you know, people who are religious and won't do. So what is their taste? Their taste is harassing the other people, you know, hanging upside down, torturing them, burning them at the stake, you know, hanging them, you know, killing them because they're not exactly the way I morally think. And if you look at it, that's how it has inspired and kept the religionists fired up in that throughout the ages. Where do you hear about it that they're just inspired by being, you know, practicing their love for God? Very rarely. And someone who is, they're a saint. You know what I'm saying? And these other moralists and that are never taken as saints. You know, they may be religious, they may be, you know, someone who's involved in religion and respected and their position is there. But it's not considered saintly. Why? Because they're not actually absorbing, they don't really aren't situated in rasa. Because they're not seeing the inherent nature.
They're not in dharma.
They're not in dharma. They're in sub-dharma. Because all religions, basically, the world, varnashram is the beginning of actual dharma. Anything else is sub-religion. Because it doesn't accept, actually, the creation of God and how it's created. That it works in this way. You make something up, so it has to be sub, yes.
In pranamaya, you explain the relationship between the worship of Surya and the broad pranamaya. So what's the relationship between Ganeshji and that other consciousness?
Ganesh is Ganapatya. It means this, I said, it's just a particular group. So you have life in general or a particular group of life.
But then Ganesh is in charge of this kind of consciousness, which is
it's not that if they worship those who are Ganapatyas, then they worship him, because that's the thing, is that they have an appreciation of a particular group. These are the five kinds of consciousness that one has in the Vedic. It's the five kinds of worship. But all those are originally going back to God. That's why in the Brahma Samhita, all the five Panchupasana are given, but showing it in connection to Krishna. You know, so it goes through right after it goes through, you know, Shiva, sun god Ganesh, Durga, you know, and even shows also the different aspects of Vishnu are connected back to Krishna. So all aspects, all five are connected to Krishna. Sorry, you had something? Yes.
What about people that are practicing another religion, but their goal is to love God, it is to serve God, and that's like the goal of their religion?
Good. Then that's very good. We will support that. But one has to make sure that the activities one is doing is actually going to get that for you.
So if they're practicing the four regs, but they're not, you know, chanting our mantra,
but
can they go back to Godhead in this lifetime?
You have to actually check how do they define God? You know what I'm saying? Because if you go into that, they want to develop love for God, but when you get down to the bottom of it, is he a person? Do you have a relationship with him? You know what I'm saying? So generally, from what I've understood, no, they all end up in impersonal. So how would you go back to Godhead? You know what I'm saying? So there's a sentiment towards God, but you don't really believe he has a form or anything. It's indicated, but at the same time, it's not. You know what I'm saying? Because they're looking at it still from mundane points. So unless it's in parampara, then they may be devotees, but it'll be rough. It's considered rough. You know, just like you have a diamond and it's in the rough. It's not fine. It's not cut. It doesn't glitter. It's just rough. So let's say someone like Mirabai, devotee of Krishna, whole life, you know, like that, talking about Krishna. But there's no parampara, there's no connection there. So what's her actual connection with Krishna? Who is she going to serve with, under? Because, you know, you have to have a relationship. It's something that's there. Like, you're in a family and considered part of a family. Why? Why are you considered part of a particular family? And all the relatives in that family accept you as a bona fide member of that family. Why? Yeah, you have a family, father and mother in that family. So therefore, you have spiritual master and the shastra that are in a proper bona fide line. And that line goes all the way back to Krishna. Otherwise, then how are you part of the family? You may be like accepted as part of the family because you work within it and it's nice, but when push comes to shove, you're not part of the family. Nice.
But isn't Jesus seen as like a Shakti Vaishnava avatar, like still?
Like that, but the thing is what is their purpose in doing? What is their piety for? Where do they want to go once that piety is fulfilled? Where do they want to go?
Heaven.
Have you ever heard of any talk about Jesus in heaven? You ever heard about it? No. So then, why? What would be the connection? You understand? Is he like the local travel agent, or you know, what is his position? You know what I'm saying? So that's the difficulty, is that it's not being taken to it doesn't come to the platform of actual proper devotional service. There's elements of it, and what you're seeing, those are good, but it's still not a complete package. You know what I'm saying? The person has a fabulous kitchen, great pots, you know, they're all Jamie Oliver. He's gone out to the best shop and bought all the best ingredients, but he has no idea how to cook. So are you going to get a good meal out of this? No. So that's the whole point. But it's not that the ingredients and the pots and this and that aren't good. It's not that their intention's not good. Just, how will it give fruit? So those aspects are good, nice. They appreciate God consciousness. They appreciate these things. So they'll take that up again later, because according to your karma, that anything you do, you want to do it again. You know what I'm saying? That's how it goes. So if it's good, you want to do the good activity again. If something bad, you want to do that again. Does that make sense? So they've done something that is, you know, we could say is pious or elevating. That aspect's good. Its original foundation also, acceptance of Supreme, this, that, all good. But, you know, when you put all the dots together, something's not quite there. Does that make sense? Like that. You know, so it's like, you know, scripture has to be given by God. Right? So that's where it comes. So you have the Vedas. You know, and that which is given by the Lord. So even if you take these other religious lines, their scripture, does it come from the Lord? Like that. Now some will say that, how do you say it? Pentateuch? The five books, you know, in your Judaic, you know, the Old Testament like this. The Torah like this. Then those then are given, much of it is given by the Lord. So now, but what's the New Testament? Is that given by the Lord? No. It's given by followers of that. So it's based on that. So that would mean then their conclusions have to go back to that. And do they actually care for that? Not really. It's changed. It's not the same. Right, the Judaic, they have it, you know, the word, they copy, they have to copy one word at a time. There's people that all they do, all day, this is a service, is copy the Torah, to make new Torahs. Right? When they do that, even though they have the whole Torah memorized, they will look at the word write it, you know, and then can see that they're the same. Write the next word. That's just the rule. So therefore, you have these texts that are now, and they found texts that are thousands of years old. They're the same. You know what I'm saying? But in Krishna, how many Bibles do you have? Right? So many of them. And if you look, they're different. There are complete verses missing. Right? Just in Genesis. I mean, just not in, it means in the first chapter of Genesis, just in the creation. And the whole part before Adam and Eve get kicked out. Just in that, there are full verses missing. Right? The one that's missing that I've noted is that when Adam and Eve then are you know, prove themselves unqualified to be, you know, moving with God, right? Then it says that God cursed them. And in that curse, they were given meat to eat. So part of the curse is meat. That is not in your New Testament Bibles. New Testament. I'm sure there's someone working on it. You understand? So right there, they just drop out those things. Very, very obvious later on when the Jews are in Sinai. And they're in the desert for 40 years, right? And so that's 365 times 40, right? Just to make that straight. And so God gives this thing manna. It's kind of like in the morning there, like the dew. And it's, you know, you go out and gather how much you gather. If it's less than what you require, it will grow. If it's more than you require, it will get less. So after some years of eating this, then they wanted some variety. They were bored. So they asked God for meat, you know, flesh. Because the general term in the older English, that meat means grain. It doesn't mean, if in the, at least I don't know about the New Testament, but in the Old Testament, if it says meat, it means grains. And if it says flesh, it means, you know, dead animal bodies. It actually is a difference. That won't be reflected in the Christian Bible. So then as soon as they said that, all these dead birds come falling out of the sky. So they think, wow, that was quick. You know, so they run over, pick up the birds, start, you know, cooking them and eating them. As they're eating them, they're dying. Right? And so the more enthusiastic ones died. The ones that are a little bit more self-controlled and a little more intelligent noted something's wrong here. Right? And so then here's the second point where God is saying about, you know, eating meat. Or eating flesh, in this case. And then also when they ask, okay, when we make the offering, the burnt offering, do you want, you know, the body or do you want the blood? He says, I'll take all the blood. You can't have one drop. So how do you take out every, and one drop means one spread throughout the whole body. That's pretty thin. You know, that's not a very high density. But so they'll do this process, you know, to try to drain all the blood out, but you can't get rid of all the blood. So if you think about it, if you can't have one drop of blood in that whole body, it means you can't have the body. Right? But they'll change the interpretation. Thou shalt not kill, they'll say, means thou shalt not murder. Kill whatever you want, just don't murder. That's all. And since you can't murder, then you can't eat the people. You know, so it kind of works out. You know, so you probably wouldn't find, you know, it'd be hard to catch, you know, to make the, you know, Papua New Guinea and the Jews, I think. You know, it'd be hard there. Made them into Christians, yeah. Do they still eat each other, though? Or? Oh, they don't do that anymore, okay. You understand? You know, so the fine points, you can get into these things, but that's not the important element. The important element is how is it being understood, the parampara, these principles like that, and where is that going back to? You know what I'm saying? That's the whole point, is what is trying to be established? So you have to look at there. Then you can see that there, yeah, nice things. There are Christians who, they believe that, you know, God was a person that you can have a conjugal relationship with, like that. You know, generally these guys get burnt at the stake, but, you know, hey, you know, that's the broadness of, you know, Catholic means broad, very broad. Yeah, so it means we'll burn anybody at the stake. We don't care, you know, it's like that. So, like that. So it's very broad-minded. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. Okay. So.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandi.